Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. For many people, it was the very first nutrition. Experts say breast milk has the perfect mix of vitamins, protein, and fat, and provides the ideal nutrition for infants. Medical authorities, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, strongly recommend breastfeeding for newborn and infants. However, there are some cases when experts say it's better not to breastfeed. And we will discuss this and more on today's show. Joining us via from Washington, D.C., is Karen Lapping. She's Program Director with the organization Alive and Thrive, a global nutrition initiative with a mission to save lives, prevent illness, and ensure healthy growth of mothers and children. Karen is a public health nutritionist who has spent more than 15 years working in international health, primarily with non-governmental organizations. Karen Lapping, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on.
Let's get right into it. Breastfeeding, we hear very often that it's important, babies need it, this is a good way to keep babies and mother healthy. How is so? How does breastfeeding keep the mother healthy as well as the baby?
Great question. So breastfeeding is critically important, as you noted, both for mothers and for babies. Oftentimes, we don't talk about the mother, but for the mother, it has a lot of protective benefits. Certainly, there's the emotional bond that's created, but it's also protective for the mother against longer-term issues like overweight, obesity, diabetes, and also some ovarian cancer and breast cancer. So there's a lot of research to support that, that a woman who does not breastfeed is more likely to encounter those situations. And it's obviously, I think we've heard a lot more about the protective benefits for children, which is really what we tend to focus on, in that it's really, we regard it as kind of the first vaccine for a child. It is absolutely life-saving in many situations, especially in places like sub-Saharan Africa, where child mortality rates are the highest.
Okay. So now, what is in the mother's breast milk that is different from formula that is so good for the baby?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think formula manufacturers have done a really good job in trying to make them appear equivalent, and this is really a false equivalence. So breast milk is really a personalized medicine. It's ideally suited for the baby, and it provides nutrients and ingredients which promote healthy growth and development at a time when gene expression is being programmed for life. Formula just can't do this. So it has a lot of different aspects to it that cannot be kind of synthetically created. And it's also really programmed specifically for that baby, using a lot of the, qualities of the mother that are then transferred to her child. So it's really, formula for the most part is inferior. It's necessary sometimes, but it's not equivalent to breast milk.
Okay, and we also hear that breastfeeding in the first hour of life is very important. Why?
Yeah, so the highest rates of child mortality are actually infant mortality. So in an infant, the first hour of life is the most important in newborn mortality. So when you kind of knock into where the mortality is happening, it's exactly in that first hour of life. And that's when what we call early initiation of breastfeeding is critically important. And what we found is that actually initiating breastfeeding within that first hour is associated with reduced mortality and actually could prevent nearly 20% of newborn deaths. That's how powerful breast milk is, and that's how powerful early initiation is.
So up to what age can a baby stay well nourished by just being breastfed?
So WHO, the World Health Organization, recommends that a child is exclusively breastfed, which literally means that's all they're getting. They're not getting water. They're not getting honey or anything that sometimes traditionally is given to a child for 6 months. So they have confirmed that this is, the global standard. And actually, it was just revisited recently because there are often questions about is 6 months really feasible and is that the best for babies? disease. So there was a paper just out this May, in fact, that reconfirmed and, you know, looked at all the research again and said, yes, in fact, 6 months is the global recommendation. And after that 6 months, then there's that's when complementary feeding, so the, you know, the nutritious foods that are given on top of breast milk should be started at 6 months of age of a child, and then breastfeeding, you know, for as long as a mother and child want from there. But 6 months is the global recommendation.
Okay. Now, for the women who have never breastfed before and will become new mom, is there such a thing as training to know how to breastfeed, or it's something that comes naturally for a woman?
Yeah, that is also a great question, because I think there's a lot around breastfeeding that, because it is kind of a natural occurrence, that we assume that everyone can do it and can do it rather easily, and this definitely is not the case. So oftentimes, we know that women need support, and they need support in lots of different ways, both from kind of technical support, like how to, you know, kind of how to position the baby and make sure that the baby is latching onto the breast effectively, how often to breastfeed, all of those sort of technical things. But a mother also needs a lot of support. So she really needs to be in an environment where she does have access to trained healthcare providers to help her with any issues that she might encounter, but also has societal family support. This is really important, especially in a lot of the places that we work, where Alive and Thrive works, where, frankly, even though we think that, you know, what's more under control than breastfeeding, actually that could not be furthest from the case. Oftentimes there's a lot of family pressures where, you know, fathers may feel a certain way, or mothers-in-laws, or community elders, whatever it might be, but people that are influential to that mother and eventually that child, and they oftentimes have a say in how children are fed. So if we don't help support women to breastfeed, both, again, from that kind of societal perspective, but also from the very technical in terms of actually understanding, you know, again, how to position the baby and other aspects that could create problems for her, we're really doing a disservice.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's a natural thing for the baby to drink the mother's milk, to breastfeed when they are put by the mother's chest, I suppose.
Definitely. And I think we see that, you know, one of the recommendations is something called kangaroo mother care. So right after a baby is born, they try to put the child right to the chest, and the child tends to actually move up. So it's very much kind of an innate thing, and it's something that we really want to see. And it's actually interesting with kind of more medicalization of deliveries in a lot of countries where there are now more and more C-sections happening, cesarean sections happening. We're seeing both early initiation of breastfeeding, the exclusive breastfeeding rates go down, because there's this idea that actually if there's a C-section, that child can't be put on the chest, and that's actually not true. So, you know, sometimes actually more traditional practices are more protective.
Mm-hmm. And is there such a thing as breastfeeding best practice? I suppose there is.
Definitely. I think, you know, we have some global kind of best practices around, you know, kind of early initiation of breastfeeding within the 1 hour, exclusive breastfeeding up to 6 months, and then appropriate complementary feeding after that. But really, you know, I think there are other best practices, I think, that we see from, you know, all aspects, again, of society, from governments, what they can do to help create good enabling environments for mothers, all the way down to kind of families and you know, individuals. So I think it depends, you know, how somebody is interested in breastfeeding, you know, what kind of best practices are relevant to them.
So what are some important interventions that can support new mothers so they are able to breastfeed their infants in the short and long term?
So we really do take, and I've, you know, kind of alluded to this, we take a pretty wide perspective, because many of the countries that we work in, it's not quite as individualistic as some of the countries where some of us live, at least. And it's really much more kind of from a societal perspective that we need to approach our work for it to be have impact both in the short term, as you're suggesting, and also the long term. So what I mean by that is that, you know, there are interventions that you would look at, for example, for policymakers and legislators. Some of the really important things that we we see are that actually countries have really strong laws that are, you know, supporting basically the WHO International Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes, which really prohibits companies from promoting infant formula and other milk formulas that fully or partially replace breast milk. So that's one thing, an intervention that at a very kind of top level, governments can have strong policies that really protect populations from unfair marketing practices. Employers can have things that we work on a lot, like workplace lactation programs. So what we're seeing is fewer and fewer mothers are breastfeeding, sometimes in part because of urbanization and having to go back to work. So if a workplace can actually set up supportive policies and programs in their workplace to support breastfeeding, you know, that's something that's a very clear intervention that can be extremely useful, again, at a kind of higher level than an individual. And then certainly service providers, pediatricians, traditional birth attendants, they need to be trained. Oftentimes, women stop breastfeeding because of the difficulties that they encounter. A lot of those difficulties can actually be addressed and resolved through good counseling and support of mothers. And then families obviously have a tremendous role to play in terms of supporting the mother and child. So we do a lot of both community-based interventions, for example, you know, where we will do a lot of work with training the carers and also making sure that they're, you know, equipped to help a woman breastfeed, working with the mother herself so that she can advocate for the sort of care that she wants to give her child through breastfeeding, and then doing things like mass media campaigns even, you know, things with radio and you know, kind of the work that you do is so critically important to make sure that there's a lot of awareness around how critically important breastfeeding is. So really, taking a more kind of societal, you know, approach is helpful both for the short term and long term.
That's great. You know, it's funny you mentioned it. A few things that you mentioned. We went to Nigeria and asked a few women about some of their challenges because it sounds so basic, right?
Right.
That women would breastfeed. But there are women that are confronted with some challenges. Not all women are able to breastfeed, or even if they can, you know, there are some problems, and you mentioned some of them. And I will let you listen to this very short audio and then have your reaction to it. Take a listen.
Exclusive breastfeeding is very good for mother and child bonding. It is very important for working moms to find a way to go around it. It's quite challenging though, because working hours interfere with the time you have with your child. But if you can find a way to go around it is better you give your child breast milk for the first 6 months of life.
The challenges I faced when I was breastfeeding my home baby was I couldn't do exclusive because I had to resume work after 3 months. So I tried the extracting method, but it doesn't just work for me. So my advice to women out there is that if they have the opportunity, they should breastfeed their child exclusively.
When you breastfeed for a long time, sometimes your nipples ache. You develop some pains, a wound on your nipple, and that sometimes discourages a lot of women from breastfeeding exclusively. Also, there's this challenge of those that are working that would want to express their breast milk. Sometimes people say, because breast milk needs to be fresh, people say they cannot express and keep because there's no light power supply. Well, you can do that putting in ice block and take it to wherever you're going to. That will help it to cool so that when you need it, you can just put it in warm water and it will be warm enough for the child and okay for the child to take.
So, Karen, I hope you heard what was just shared by some women, and they are based in Nigeria. So some of the challenges that they expressed are also have to do with some of the realities in the country, part of the countries. For example, they talk about sometimes there is no light and how to keep the breast milk. So let's go point by point. They mentioned a few things, but one of the common challenges that the three women talked about was when you have to go back to work.
Definitely.
Yes. So let's start with that. Working new mom, how do they handle this?
Yeah, I think we're really seeing. So as I mentioned, I think with an increase of urbanization, we really see breastfeeding rates plummet. And actually, interestingly enough, just recently, I believe it was just in the last month or so, the governor of Kaduna State in Nigeria just enacted a law requiring 6 months of maternity leave for public sector employees. So there's a lot of really good, I was just recently in Nigeria about a month ago, and there's a lot of momentum around supporting and creating a good enabling environment for breastfeeding and for both early initiation and kind of in that 6 months exclusive breastfeeding. We recently launched with the government and UNICEF and other partners the Start Strong campaign, which is really around, again, breastfeeding in Nigeria in particular. And it's a tough one. I think, first of all, having legislation really helps. So, you know, definite congratulations to Kaduna State, and hopefully others will come online with that as well. So that's one thing that can really protect women from the pressure of having to go back. Obviously, that's limited. In this case, it was limited to public sector employees, and it's also more limited to those that work in a formal work environment. We do a lot of work in rural areas, and that's a little bit of a mixed bag because sometimes it's easier for women in a more rural kind of traditional setting to exclusively breastfeed because she's not going to an office. Other times, a lot of my work has been done in Southeast Asia where women are actually needing to go to fields, and that's been quite difficult. And so some of the things that have helped have been kind of community support structures like community creches where different women or older siblings or partners, mothers-in-laws basically can rotate taking care of their children not too far away from where the women are working so that they can breastfeed during the day. Oftentimes, it's the women and the communities themselves. They certainly are the experts in their own conditions, and they know good solutions. So a lot of times, it's working with them on, you know, what they see as feasible and trying to get that to a point where, you know, it's actually achievable as well.
Okay, Karen. And we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about a couple of those challenges that the women raised, and also a study that your organization recently released that had some very interesting findings. We'll be back for more on our conversation on breastfeeding. And don't go away. We'll be back after the break.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
What's up, what's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
We run everything.
Yeah.
Radio.
Yeah.
The club.
Yeah.
This is Upfront.
The hottest program on The Voice of America.
The hottest under the sun.
Hey Africa, listen to Upfront each Wednesday at 17:30 UTC on The Voice of America for great music. Well, I personally like rock and roll. Led Zeppelin makes me go crazy. You need cool air.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is breastfeeding. Joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Karen Lapping, Program Director with the organization Alive and Thrive. So, Karen, right before the break, we were touching on some of the challenges that women are facing, and we talked about workplace and how policies could be put in place and you know, to help these women with the example of Kaduna State giving 6 months. That's really something, hey?
It is, you know, far better than a lot of us have in, you know, in the United States for sure, and other countries. So it's really commendable. Very, you know, not that many countries have been able to do that. So it's really, it sets an example.
Yes, it definitely does. So one of the other issues that I noted was one woman said that when she breastfed, the breasts were aching. She talked about the nipple aching. So I think it's something that we've heard women talk about, how it can be painful sometimes. So how do you address this? What is to be done?
Yeah, I think not knowing exactly, you know, the situation that she was in, but I think a lot of women do have issues with painful breastfeeding, and that's where, again, access to a trained breastfeeding counselor can be really helpful, because they're able to really troubleshoot with the woman if it's like a latching issue or if she needs a balm, or, you know, I think there's a variety of responses to that issue. But I think what the worst situation is that she gets no support and she stops breastfeeding. And we know that, you know, there's more likelihood of a woman continuing to breastfeed if she does have access to those sorts of supports. Sometimes it's, frankly, talking to somebody else and finding out what their neighbor did. Just kind of that peer support can be extremely helpful. So I think it's you know, again, multifaceted, and not knowing the exact circumstances on that, I would just say that having access to those with experience and those that can troubleshoot is really critical to sustain breastfeeding.
Okay, and the final issue that I noted is conservation of breast milk. First of all, being able to pump the milk and keep it in a way that it's fresh. So how long does a mother have? I mean, how much time is safe to, first of all, keep the breast milk in the refrigerator for the baby to take? What is the expiration date, if you will?
So it's fine in the refrigerator for some time. So that's not as much of a concern. You can also freeze it. What's probably more of an issue for most women is that they don't have access to refrigeration or steady refrigeration. And that's where I think there are some technological fixes in terms of solar and other options, you know, that can help. If she's in more of a kind of a more like a field-based situation, as I explained, you know, a lot of women who have to work in fields, that's going to be really challenging. And that's why it's really important, if it's at all possible, to have the child closer to the mother, because there's not necessarily a great response to unsafe storage in that situation. I think if you're even dealing with a refrigerator, like you're in, you know, not as bad shape in terms of storage of the breast milk. And really, you know, women can produce quite a bit of breast milk. So, you know, she hopefully would be in a situation where she would be going through that breast milk at a pretty steady pace and wouldn't be worrying about it expiring.
Now, there are some mothers who are not able to breastfeed their children for medical reasons, for example. What are the recommendations when mothers are not able to do so medically? Because some other women will say, no, I want to keep the shape of my breast, so I don't want to breast milk. That's another story.
Yeah, but exactly. On the medical side, it's interesting, because I think a lot of people do think that there are, you know, quite a few medical reasons why a woman can't breastfeed. That's actually not the case. You know, in our work, I'm a nutritionist, and there's actually very, very few situations where a woman cannot medically breastfeed because of her situation. By and large, what's affected, for example, if you had an undernourished woman, she tends to produce enough volume of breast milk for the child. What tends to suffer sometimes can be the nutrients in the breast milk. And there are still things that can be done, for example, delayed cord clamping, so that you get more iron into the first milk that the child gets, can make a significant difference if she's iron deficient herself. So with that in mind, the idea that actually, for the most cases, there are very few medical reasons why a woman can't breastfeed, I think you begin to get into some of these other situations where, frankly, you know, she might hit a roadblock, you know, like sore nipples or inability to get the child to latch well. And that's where, again, a kind of skilled counselor can really help her. If you know, there really is a medical reason why she can't breastfeed. There are a few other options. One option that will become more and more probably prevalent in some of the places that we work and maybe some of where some of your listeners are human human breast milk banks. And these are just what the name suggests. They're mm-hmm. repositories of human breast milk that are provided by donor mothers. And we've actually been working to set up a regional network in Southeast Asia. So this is a way, if a woman really wants her child to be breastfed, but she cannot breastfeed, she can have donor milk, you know, that's screened very carefully and rigorously given to the child. So that's one thing that can be done. Certainly, you know, if she has a medical issue and she needs to stop breastfeeding or couldn't start breastfeeding, is not interested in donor milk and would rather go towards formula, you know, then just safe use of formula. And what we're most concerned about in a lot of locations where there is not necessarily clean water is that the child mortality skyrockets because formula is mixed with unclean water, and a child is much more likely to die from diarrhea, other infectious diseases because of the mixing of that unclean water. So formula is always an option, but again, it should be the last option, and if it's being used, it needs to be used safely, which is hard to guarantee in many settings.
Yes. Alive and Thrive published a research recently that says not breastfeeding costs the world $1 billion a day. How so?
Yeah, so we did, and it was really, you know, an interesting study, the cost of not breastfeeding, and it looked at that cost both economically and also from a human impact. And so on the human side, we know that every year we could save 600,000 children and over 100,000 mothers. It's, you know, because of illnesses linked to inadequate breastfeeding. In economic terms, as you mentioned, the world loses about $1 billion a day. And that $1 billion is really through preventable deaths, but it's also combined with cognitive losses. We know that breastfed children, exclusively breastfed children, that's when their brains are beginning to develop and are getting hardwired. And the cognitive losses from not receiving that early breast milk has impacts. That, along with health system costs, as we talked about earlier, there are, you know, really negative consequences sometimes from not breastfeeding in terms of, you know, again, not having that immunological boost at the beginning and then sustained boost where children are sicker with pneumonia, with diarrhea. So those health costs also add up to about $1 billion a day. So it's pretty profound, the cost on society from a human perspective and also an economic perspective.
Okay. And before we wrap, Karen, if you can give us some of the recommendations of what Alive and Thrive is doing, or just go over a few steps just for your final words.
Sure. So really, I think one of the most important things is awareness of how important breastfeeding is. So really appreciate this show to really, you know, put a fine point on that. And everybody should feel welcome to look at our website, aliveandthrive.org, also UNICEF. There's a global breastfeeding collective, and that's unicef.org/breastfeeding. And that has lots of ways to become active in your own communities to support breastfeeding. Also the World Alliance for Breastfeeding, which is WABA.org. And all of these websites, you know, that are geared for slightly different audiences have excellent ideas about how to get involved at an individual level, you know, how to advocate for, you know, the best kind of start for life, which we know is breastfeeding for children.
Okay, Karen Lapping, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. We really appreciate you calling attention to this important issue.
Absolutely. So that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. We want to thank our guest, Karen Lapping, Program Director with the organization Alive and Thrive. We thank her for being with us today. For more on today's topic, log on to our website at voanews.com/healthchat. Also, join us on Facebook and let's keep the conversation going. Just look for VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown and engineer Patrick Deya. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA.